Oh, man, has it been a fascinating day already. And it's going to get more interesting over the next hour and a half or so. We'll have you covered. Pacers-Bucks game number 6 coming up tonight at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And look, you know, I'm not a big fan of the must-win situation. I'm not. I've kind of come down from the ledge on that. If you ask me about, I don't know, it's 2024. You know, do you guys do this? So every morning, my routine's about the exact same. So I'm usually up about 5:30 every single morning. And, you know, as most of you people out there that have a daily routine of some sort, and I don't know if you work from home, maybe you have a routine. I don't know. It seems to be different. Like, I've got a lot of friends that work from home, and they think it's absolutely nuts. I get up at 5:30 every day, but I do that, get up, do my workout, all those different things. But I typically lay in bed for about 15, 20 minutes and am on the phone basically scrolling through what the heck happened last night that I missed. But I also do this. I'm not sure if you guys do this as well. I look at my Facebook memories, and some of it to get a chuckle, some of it to look at pictures of my wife and I at our latest Michigan trip or whatever the case may be from like 3 years ago. But also, it goes all the way back to like 2008, when I got Facebook for the first time, or 2007, I can't remember. And I look at the things I was saying from a sports standpoint, and it's kind of funny because, folks, I had no clue. I didn't. That was 17 years ago. Had no clue. And, I was a total fan. I absolutely was. And, you know, I acknowledge that, you know, doing this show, being in the media, having covered games, Pacers, Colts, Indians, all of it, Reds too. I went down to Cincinnati several times, covered some of those games. It changes your mindset a lot. And I think differently, and I've got to understand that. And honestly, it might not be a bad message to let listeners know when they're listening to the show, because I don't care. Like, I want people to understand, you know, my thought processes and how I structure the things I say. You know, I'm not in the business of hot taking or saying things for attention or just to be a contrarian. Like, everything that I throw out there, if you caught me out and about and wanted to talk sports, I would say the exact same thing on this microphone that I would out in public. And I hope that that's more authentic than some of the other stuff that you have out there. There's some good shows. There's a lot of shows I listen to. There's a lot of information that I pay attention to. But we've gotten so far deep in this business into the hot take ridiculousness that I hope we dare to be a little bit different. But honestly, I really wouldn't want to do a show a different way than this. So I'm not sure how we got there, but that's my message. But the point of the matter is, I look at my Facebook memories and look at the way I thought about things back in the day, and it was like the Pacers were in like a playoff series in 07-08, and it was like game 2, and I said, oh, this is a must win for the Pacers. And I'm like, golly, I'm 33 years old now. 17 years ago, that was a 15-16 year old Mark that had no clue. I had no clue. And, you know, now 17 years, 16 years later, whatever the case may be, I've got some sort of clue. I don't want to be the know-it-all, and I don't pretend to be at all. But anyway, all of that to be said, I think it goes without saying, but we'll say it, that you have a much better opportunity winning at home than you do on the road in Milwaukee in Game 7, especially with a team that would win 2 in a row, and you'd go home to you'd go to Milwaukee to a fan base that would be eager to change the momentum and send the Pacers packing and all those different things. So there's a lot riding on tonight. There is. Like, there is an immense amount of pressure, and this is how you stack up what a playoff series is like, you know. And for young teams, and this is just philosophically in general, it's not just to this Pacers team, but you know, you lose game 1 you get hot for three games, you win three games in a row, and you face a team that you feel like's defeated, or maybe that team felt that way after you beat them three straight times, you go there and you get embarrassed a little bit, and now it's your turn to kind of sit there and say, all right, we're going to close this thing out. And the inexperience of this moment, like every moment of this series has been total inexperience for the Indiana Pacers. But this is the hardest thing to do, is close out a playoff series. And there are a lot of teams, a lot of programs, organizations, whatever, that have had really good teams, and they've struggled with doing this, closing out the series. And I don't really care who's out on the floor. It's hard to shut the door because, as Tyrese Halliburton explained the other night, and it's true, the Bucks were playing in desperation mode. And, you know, when you say that out in the public eye, it comes across differently than what it really means. But when you're playing in desperation mode, you are playing freer. You are okay with kind of making mistakes, which, crazy enough, like, it's weird. You shouldn't play freer if you're up 3-1 than if you're down 3-1, because you don't want to make as many mistakes when you have margin, when you have so little margin for error. But if you really think about it, folks, it's the opposite in sports. You know, maybe Milwaukee was playing tight in a couple of games in Indiana, and in game 5 it shocked everybody. They were the ones that played with freedom, played with a little bit more pace, played with a little bit more attack mentality, and saying, you know what, hey, we have nothing to lose at this point except game number 5, and they played that way. Patrick Beverley scored 12 points in the second quarter. We never saw him be aggressive at all offensively, but in game number 5, down 3-1, facing elimination, what do? You play with no fear, and you play with freedom. You know, honestly, if you have a 3-1 lead like the Pacers did the other night, you should play like that, saying, shoot, pressure's on them to get this game. Let's play with freedom. Let's play with no fear. Let's play with an attack mindset. And it ended up being the opposite last night, or on Tuesday night. It's kind of how it works. In a weird, weird way. But here's the biggest factor tonight. So this is a little bit of gamesmanship, and I wonder if Milwaukee is playing a little bit of a game here. So I'm sure many of you that listen to this program and pay attention to the Indiana Pacers probably paid attention to the report today that Giannis and Damian Lillard are trying to give it a go tonight. Now, this is brilliantly done by Milwaukee because, you know, the mental game is as much as anything else. You've got to think that every player, every member of that Pacers organization in the back of their mind is thinking, you know, at the start of the series, it had nothing to do with Damian Lillard. It had everything to do was, when is Giannis going to come back in this series, if he's going to come back at all? And then you added Damian Lillard to the mix. To be totally honest with you, I'm shocked he missed Game 5. It may lend a little bit more perspective on, hey, that injury is a little bit more serious than many anticipated initially. So it's combined into the two, but here's how this happens to the media. And Adrian Wojnarowski is really good at this. This happens with Adam Schefter. This happens with all the major newsbreakers in every single sport. Most oftentimes in the public eye, you look at this and saying, oh, Woj got another scoop. But the media is used as bait, is used as a little bit of psychological warfare at some points. And in the back of my mind, folks, there is a rhyme and a reason why this got out to Adrian Wojnarowski earlier today. That the injury report comes out, but Woj gets the scoop. Hey, both of these guys are trying to give it a go in Game 6 in Indiana. And here's why Milwaukee's doing this. they want in the back of their minds that they have to prepare for, or in the back of their minds, you know, have those inexperienced Pacers players be thinking about, oh my gosh, the scenarios if Giannis and Damian Lillard play. What do we have to account for? Hey, they haven't played them for the same. Like, these are all the things that you're thinking about. And you know what? You kind of play a little bit if you're Milwaukee to the inexperience of Indiana. Because if Milwaukee didn't want this to get out, this probably wouldn't get out. Because as we had Pat Boylan on the Pacer, from the Pacers Radio Network on yesterday, if you recall him saying this, he said it's been a very, very big mystery about Lillard and about Giannis for this entire series. You know, it was an estimate on his part saying, I think Giannis is going to, you know, be back here, there, whatever. Doc Rivers has been very, very, very coy about this whole situation on purpose. And so you're telling me all of a sudden in game number six, information becomes available that, you know, Woj got from a third-party source and, oh, now we're getting some information. No. This is how this is going. Milwaukee's playing a game. They are. They're playing a game, so, you know, there's a little extra that you got to think about here. If Giannis and Damian Lillard come back, I'm telling you, that's how this works. That's absolutely how this works. And I guess good on Milwaukee for playing the game this way, because this happens way more than you would ever know. Way more than you would ever know. Oh, hey, he's trying to give it a go tonight and doesn't end up playing. And it just it takes your mind off of the most important things of what's ahead of you. And for Indiana tonight, who cares who plays? Just close it out and play your game, because you clearly did not play the style, did not play with the crisp nature that you had in games 2 through 4 in the previous game. But in the back of your mind, you got to think how this game does change if Giannis or Damian, or both play. And Milwaukee is playing that game. And you know what? Why wouldn't you? If you've got that card to play, why not play it? You know, put the deception out there. Now, what do I think is going to happen tonight? Do Giannis and do Damian Lillard play? Well, I got to go by what we saw in the injury report, and that was doubtful for Giannis. It was questionable for Damian Lillard. I don't know what's right, what's wrong, what's indifferent, but I would say Damian Lillard has a good chance to play, and I would say Giannis does not. I would say Giannis does not. But you always have to think of it this way, too, from a star player perspective. If you're a star player and you've got this opportunity here to be labeled as the warrior, you know, Giannis goes out there, he helps Milwaukee. It doesn't even matter if Giannis scores 25 points in the game and grabs 10 rebounds and dishes out 10 assists. If Milwaukee goes into Indiana tonight and wins and Giannis is on the floor, Giannis is going to get the credit of being the warrior that came back to save the day and send this series to 7 games. Seriously. And that's kind of the benefit that Giannis would have ahead. It may not be right, because I doubt that Giannis would be the leading scorer tonight if he played. He's been off for 2.5-3 weeks. I mean, that's a long time, and he's rehabbing, hasn't been able to come back, but he comes back at this point. But the star player can kind of make that decision. The star player can go to the coach and say, I don't care what you say, I don't care if I'm 50%, I'm playing. And that could be a real possibility tonight if you're Milwaukee. Now, I said this yesterday, and we'll go further in depth on this. I feel as though if Giannis were to play tonight, that this would far more affect the defensive end of the floor than it would the offensive end of the floor. Quite frankly, I think it actually plays into the Pacers' hands if Giannis plays from an offensive standpoint. Now, defensively, and this has been a little bit of the elephant in the room, and it really hasn't been talked about that much, and it should have been, and that is this. The Pacers, over the last 3 games, have had a real inability in getting into the lane. The Pacers were one of the best teams in the NBA, if not the best team in the NBA, from percentage of offense in the lane. And what they didn't do, actually, you know, and this goes back to what we said yesterday about Milwaukee kind of saying to the Pacers in Game 5, prove that you can beat us from deep again. Because the Pacers hit 23 threes in Game 4. They hit 12 in Game number 5. Complete and utter difference. Pacers got hot, and they never really relented from the perimeter. This was also while the Pacers struggled at getting into the lane. You know, really, Game 2 is the only real game that they really used the lane to their benefit. Games 3, 4, and then 5 have all been perimeter-oriented. Well, defensively, with Giannis on the floor, I got to tell you, getting in the lane gets even that much more difficult with Giannis on the floor defensively. You know, I know Brooke Lopez patrols the paint, and that's a large reason why you're having trouble getting in the paint. But I got to think, with Giannis there, that's more difficult, and so you might have to win again from the perimeter. And so, you know, that to me, I wouldn't necessarily be as concerned about the offensive end, because I actually think Milwaukee can't play with the type of pace with Giannis in the lineup, and especially a Giannis that isn't 100%. They can't play with the pace that Indiana would like to play with. So ultimately, you get missed shots on the defensive end from an offensive standpoint. You got to get out and run to force the issue and not allow the Milwaukee defense to get set so you can get into the lane. So maybe it plays both ways, but I would say from a half-court offense standpoint, I'd be very concerned for Indiana, for a team that's already struggled at getting really consistent offense in the paint. That gets much more difficult with Giannis into the game. Now, Damian Lillard plays. Now both play. You haven't seen this version of Milwaukee, and I think it'd be new for everybody. Now, if Damian Lillard plays, in my opinion, I don't think that's as much of a concern as schematically changing some of the ways you do things as it would be Giannis. I think Giannis changes a lot the way you do things offensively. Again, I don't really think personnel is the problem with the Indiana Pacers defense. I don't. I think that they have matchups really for anything that Milwaukee throws at them. Because it still baffles me to say this, that Bobby Portis beat one-on-one matchups with the Indiana Pacers offensively in game number five. I mean, it's just wild to think. Patrick Beverley had a 12-point second quarter. Malik Beasley had a playoff high 17 points. Like, we're talking about the secondary of the secondary players on this Milwaukee roster. You know, at full strength, Bobby Portis is probably their fourth option offensively. You know, he's a guy that I think, from what it seemed like, when Giannis is healthy, Bobby Portis is off the bench as the sixth man. He's not even in the starting lineup. So that, to me, it doesn't have really much to do personnel-wise with Milwaukee about how the Pacers are going to match up and all those different things. I think Pascal Siakam's a good matchup for Giannis. I mean, he's one of the few that lengthwise can kind of hang with him. You know, you have enough guard play at the top defensively, Nembhard and McConnell, to harass Lillard, and then the rest of your guys should be able to take care of the other matchups. You know, if it's Halliburton on Beasley or Halliburton on Middleton or whatever the case may be, you've got length and speed and good matchups for most of these. Like, what baffled me about Game 5 and was a little bit glaring was the on-ball defense on guys that are not, shouldn't be threats. You were getting beat off the dribble, beat on one-on-one on-ball defense, and the fact of the matter is the Pacers lost by 23 points. And the Pacers still at the end of the game had more assisted baskets than did Milwaukee. You know what that tells me? Milwaukee just said, hey, we're going to get the ball on ISOs to Chris Middleton. Hey, we're going to get the ball on ISOs to Bobby Portis. We're going to get the ball on ISOs with Patrick Beverley just out. The quickness factor with Patrick Beverley getting to his spots over the defender, like, that's more concerning to me than really anything else at this point. So you've got to be better there. You have to be better on ball defense-wise. I thought the Pacers were outstanding in Game 2 in that regard. Like, they made everything difficult for Damian Lillard in Game number 2, and we still have yet to see that on-ball defense since Game number 2, to be totally honest with you. So, again, I don't think that's been talked about enough, just how bad, from an on-ball defense standpoint, the Indiana Pacers were in Game number 5. They weren't good. And they were getting beaten by guys that kind of make you scratch your head as, how in the world are these guys beating these anyway. So hopefully that gets wrapped up. I really don't have any concerns that the Pacers aren't going to hit shots tonight. Like, they're not going to shoot like they did in Game 4. But they're definitely not going to shoot like they did in Game number 5. Like, you can point to, if they have another offensive performance like they did in Game 5, like, look, they're not going to win this series because they got to play a lot better offensively. But I'm more concerned defensively, in my opinion. I really am. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. I appreciate that very, very much. It's Game number 6, Bucks and Pacers tonight. And look, I'd love to be there. And if you're going tonight, good on you. Enjoy the heck out of it. It would be a lot of fun to watch a Pacers team clinch a playoff series at home. It really would be. I think that would be awesome to see. Look, I, like many others, would have loved to see them close it out in Game number 4, in Game number 5. That clearly did not occur. And I guess the silver lining in everything is that you come back home, have a chance to close it out at home. You really do. You have a chance to close it out at home, and it'd be nice. And as has been said before, the Pacers are very good bouncing back from, you know, losses or downfalls or whatever you want to characterize it as. So we will be patiently monitoring our social media to see if there's any update on Giannis Antetokounmpo for tonight. Again, golly, you got to love the fact that tonight's tip-off is 6:30. Thank goodness. Oh, thank goodness it's not a 9:30 start. Oh, it was rough on Tuesday night. I sound like 50 years old today. I really do. But I can't do it, folks. Can't do it. I used to stay up late on late, watch every single game. Can't do it anymore. Nope. Can't do it anymore. So, all right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Ball State sports. We'll also continue on Pacers. We'll have Mick Tindrill, voice of the Cardinals, coming up here in a little bit. Once again, very pivotal series coming up for baseball and for softball. Also, when we come back, we'll tell you about tomorrow's 1925 Pump House at the Courtyard. We're going to be on the patio again at 4 tomorrow, and I'm fired up to have this guest with us as he does every single year at the Pump House. We'll talk about all of that when we return on a Thursday show right after this. As always, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That is the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. So Pacers and Bucks, Game number 6 tonight, 6:30, the tip-off from Gainbridge Fieldhouse. The Pacers attempt to close out the Bucks. They had an opportunity to do so on Tuesday and look to do it the second time around. We are back live tomorrow from the 1925 Pump House at the Courtyard on the patio at 4 o'clock, and I'm fired up as always. We've done this every year we've been out there, and George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin is going to join us. He is, I mean, all in on the Colts beat and all the different things. But, you know, what I find fascinating about George's coverage is this, that he also has covered a lot of other sporting events this year. And I want to get some of the perspective on this because I would imagine he's going to be doing a lot of the coverage of Caitlin Clark as well with the Indiana Fever. And so I tell you what, there's going to be a lot of angles we talk about tomorrow. We'll talk about the draft class for the Indianapolis Colts that, again, you know, had some intrigue, and the first overall or the first round draft pick was maybe a little bit of a surprise if you went by what many were projecting to be the case for the Colts. So a lot going on, and, you know, this is going to be one of the off-season questions that I think will be very, very interesting. Okay, and hang with me here on this, and I'm gonna throw it out rhetorically, and then we'll hopefully talk more about it tomorrow. What is going to be the mark for a successful year number two for Anthony Richardson at quarterback? What is going to give you peace of mind that you have the guy moving forward? Is it team success? You know, because, you know, what I find interesting about the NFL is how quickly it can change from, yeah, we like you, to no, we don't like you anymore. Daniel Jones from the New York Giants is a perfect example of this. Daniel Jones, the first year under Brian Daboll 2 years ago, had his best statistical season, and the Giants went to the playoffs. And so they said, yep, you're our guy. They signed him up to a long-term deal, and now a year later, after injuries and everything went wrong for the Giants, they're trying desperately, the Giants are, to move off of Daniel Jones. So, like, you know, the Giants had team success that year. Jones had a good year. He wasn't fantastic, but he was certainly a guy worthy of that deal. You know, you're not going to have to commit that deal to Richardson for a couple more seasons, but I just wonder if it's more team success related and less Anthony Richardson statistics. Anthony Richardson passing touchdowns and, you know, interceptions. I know the durability factor is going to be the number one side of things. Like, he's going to have to certainly show you that first and foremost before anything else really is a factor. But I just find it fascinating. I really, really do, because I think the mark of most starting quarterbacks is, yeah, you want him to be in the top 5 or 10 of passing touchdowns, passing yards, whatever. But after the Colts were on the doorstep of making the playoffs a year ago, and also what C.J. Stroud has accomplished already in Houston, like, what is going to determine a successful second year sophomore campaign for Anthony Richardson at quarterback? I am fascinated by that response. We'll talk more about that with George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin coming up tomorrow. We didn't have a chance to mention it yesterday because a lot of Pacers conversation yesterday, but Ball State Men's Golf, who won the Mid-American Conference Championship over the weekend, has learned their fate for the NCAA Regional coming up. Now, the NCAA Regional is interesting because the Cardinals have had players actually play in the Regional as individuals, but obviously, since you won as a team, you get the automatic bid into the NCAA Regional round. Ball State will be heading to the Chapel Hill Regional. It's going to be held at UNC Findlay Golf Course, which is the golf course of a course, North Carolina University. This will be May 13th through May 15th. So it'll be a week from Monday. We'll begin that process. So Ball State is going to be the 12th seed in the regional, features 13 teams and 10 individuals, not among those teams. And again, it'll be very, very interesting to see how all of it kind of plays out, and a great opportunity to, again, play another course that, you know, you have an opportunity to maybe make something happen. So, and here's the deal. And Ball State's one of 81 teams in the regional. Okay. And, you know, I don't know from the list of these teams, again, how many of them you've seen, but from a general standpoint, when you play in golf tournaments, okay, and you play all around the country, which Ball State Men's Golf has done, both in the fall schedule and the spring schedule, you see a lot of high-powered, nationally ranked, national caliber teams in the field already. So when you go to the regional, it's not going to be something different. And this is where it's a little different, I would think, in sports like football and basketball. And you play individual matchups, but when you play in tournaments, when you play in groupings and regional, a lot of your other tournaments, when they're hosted in different parts of the country, you're going to see a lot of similar teams that you're going to see. Now, golf is one of those things where you kind of play to your own standard, but again, I wonder if that is more conducive to, you know, team success, because you're comfortable. A lot of the teams going in there haven't seen this course like you have. There's a lot of different things that I would think would be, again, conducive to having your team have success. But again, it just feels like this program is so excited for this opportunity, and how, again, breaking through to win the Mid-American Conference Championship's great, and whatever else happens here, they want to go compete, they want to go do well, and Ball State's got a couple of individual golfers that will compete anyway, but as a team, they feel great about where their team is at, and they should. They absolutely should, based on what they just accomplished. So, Mick Tidrell had a feature on Ball State Men's Golf, so we'll ask him about that. But also, the baseball team, again, they're right where they need to be, in position for the Mid-American Conference. Softball in a similar spot as well. Ball State Baseball continuing the Mid-American Conference string. Last weekend, they had a group of series with North Carolina State to kind of break up a little bit of the monotony of what Mid-American Conference play is. So, Ball State, again, looking pretty good as far as what they've done in Mid-American Conference play here as of late. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about softball, as well as Mick Tidrell, voice of the Cardinals, is going to join us coming up in the final segment of the show. We're back with you next on The Power, Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Final segment of a Thursday show. It's The Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN, brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you are with us, and always glad when we're joined by the voice of the Ball State Cardinals. That is Mick Tidrell. Mick, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
I'm great, Mark. Everything's good. Today was sunny and 80-plus. Really good day to enjoy some golf in the morning and then a little bit more work in the afternoon and evening.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of typical this time of the year, right? I mean, you got to take advantage of those mornings, absolutely.
Yeah, when it's 65 degrees in the morning at like 8 or 9 o'clock and can go play with Grandpa and just enjoy the golf course, like that is time well spent and time that Fan that we love to have, especially the first golf outing of the year for me. So yeah, man, it's been good. We got to get out there soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you call Mike Fleck and say, Coach, I'm ready? If you need me a week from Monday, I'd be happy to help you.
Coach Fleck has heard and seen enough of me the last week, so I didn't want to bug him with anything else. But it's really, really cool to be around that squad winning the MAC championship and everything. So I just wanted to give Coach Fleck's line a little bit of a break.
he's so gracious with his time, especially amongst everything. And I can't even imagine the text calls and all of those different things that coaches go through when they win a championship. And they'll embrace it all because it means, shoot, you won a championship. But you did a little feature on that and interviewed Coach Fleck. What stood out to you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stood out, Mark, is just like the motto of prove it was throughout the year, and really that's been something that Coach Fleck has lived by, and they really did it. That conversation with Coach Fleck and those three athletes was awesome, because you could see, feel the emotion of seeing their name pop up on the selection show and then understand and know they're going to North Carolina and what's to come. But it just stuck out the most that all those players and coach have lived by that mantra of prove it all year, and really cool to see it come to fruition for that squad.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch, and again, the celebration and all of that. But, man, they go right back to work. I mean, it felt like they had like a 12 to 24-hour little celebration. And you saw the picture like I did. There's golfers back in the lab right afterwards.
Yeah, it was really cool, Mark, to see Carter Smith in at, 7, 8 in the morning, the day after they win the MAC championship, having practice time. Like, that's just incredible to see athletes take things as seriously as they do, and to care as much, because they know that there are teams and there are players right behind them waiting to take their spot. That's one thing. And the other thing is, hey, we know we got to go compete in this NCAA regional. If we want to be one of the top 30 teams to go into the next round, like, we have to compete, and we have to practice and be at the top of our game. So really cool to see players go back into the lab and just take care of business like that.
Yep. Give people an idea of how the NCAA regional, from how you understand it, we explained it a little bit as well, how the regional kind of works in golf compared to some other sports. And we'll be talking about this for about a week and a half or so. So.
Yeah, Mark, the biggest difference is, like, you have the 81 teams that make it to the NCAA regionals. There are 6 regionals, and depending on what regional you are in, and there's either 13 or 14 teams, and then out of there, you have 5 teams that make it out of each regional. So a total of 30 teams move on out of the original 81 that join the regionals, and then all 30 of those teams go to one site to compete to try and win the championship. So it's a really unique setup, and I think it's awesome that out of all of the 6 sites, I know Ball State's not going there, but West Lafayette, the Purdue Regional, is the only one that's not near a body of water on a coast somewhere. So
yeah,
it's kind of unique that Indiana has that opportunity, and it would have been really cool to see Ball State go there, but I know they're pumped up to go to North Carolina and have an opportunity there. So it's kind of the setup of what the NCAA Regionals are, and you get a chance to go compete for a title if you're one of those final 30 teams and a top 5 team out of your regional.
That's outstanding. It's Mick Tidrell, voice of the Cardinals, with us right now here on the Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Well, as we enter May, the stretch run is here for both Ball State baseball and Ball State softball. Let's talk about the baseball team first. Look, they've made a seismic shift, obviously, in their Mid-American Conference standings over the last several weeks. So Northern Illinois, the matchup coming up this weekend, they're on the road. Then they have a middle-of-the-week game against Butler before they have Central Michigan next weekend. And then the following weekend, they're at Kent State. So 9 Mid-American Conference games left. What stands out the most to you, Mick?
Yeah, Mark, I think the thing that stands out the most is just the way that Ball State climbed up the standings so fast, like second to last all the way up to second for a moment. And now they're back into the fourth slot, it looks like, after this past weekend of playing out of conference in Miami and Western Michigan, doing some things. But to climb that quickly stood out dramatically. And you mentioned the teams that they play. It's a really good opportunity to continue to gain ground and move into a top 2 slot against Northern Illinois and Central Michigan to the world, and Kent State as well, who's tied with them at 12-9 in the conference. So Ball State's either facing a team that's tied with them in the standings or below them in conference play the rest of the way. So that stands out. But I think the on-play performance side of things that stands out is the pitching. And we can go in-depth about the offense, too, because the offense has been great during conference as well ever since the end of that Bowling Green series. But you look at what the pitching has done, Mark. The Merritt Beakers of the world have come in and taking control, like a Friday guy that can be your ace. Merritt has proven that. Keegan Johnson's come in as a freshman and a second left-handed guy to be able to do what he's done is outstanding as well. So the pitching stands out from a performance standpoint, and I really like how coaches used pitchers like Nate Blaine, because Blaine was a starter for a little bit, then you want to put him in during conference play out of the bullpen to close out games. But, hey, he can go start too if we want him to start, long relief if he needs to. I know his last couple outings haven't been what he wants it to, but outside of those last two, really pitched well for Nate Blaine. So, yeah, I think everything's come together at the right time. And when you have those pieces that we mentioned and then on top of that starting to get healthy, like, you're really in a different position to make a run. And players like Hunter Dobbins coming from hitting not too well at the start of the year to now all the way up to 290 and 14 home runs, like, that happened quick, Mark. It happened really quick. And to have Dobbins, who's, you know, Buster Posey Award watch list catcher, to be on that way offensively too, really big boost. So health, pitching, offensive explosion at certain moments have all helped. And then, like, where the – I know it's hard to project, and you got to play who you got to play, but schedule-wise, they have a real opportunity to take care of some teams. And it's a fun time of year when we've got five baseball games in 1 week coming up next week.
Yeah, I think it's great. And if you look at the series that Ball State has to play, Central Michigan at 6-15 might be the only team of those final three series that they're going to have a lot of things go their way in order to get into the mix of the Mid-American Conference tournament. But you can control your own fate with Kent State, like you mentioned, tied with you, and then Northern Illinois at 9-12 has a great shot if things go well for them over the final 3 weeks. So those teams will have a lot to play for, but I don't know if anybody's playing as well as Ball State right now in that top four, and that's got to feel good.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Bowling Green, who's been outstanding this season, but, I mean, start off 17-0 in conference. Look, they're 1-3 in their last four games in conference, so just saying. it is a very tall task to try and take on Bowling Green at this point, but I think one thing that does stand out, Mark, like you said, These are big series for Ball State, and to be a team that's already got 25 overall wins, which is tied with Bowling Green for the most overall wins of any MAC team. You're sitting in a really good position for Coach Maloney to go for another 30-plus win season like he has every year as a Ball State head coach.
And finally, softball. Golly, look at this in the Mid-American Conference. You have two teams that are tied for fourth, Toledo and Central Michigan, and then you have a bunch of teams, Ball State's amongst those, at 10-12, 10-13, Akron, 10-14, Kent State. Like, you've got five teams that are really separated by maybe two games, and those could that can determine the fourth seed there. So softball in a different position, but a great opportunity here coming up.
They control their own destiny, Mark. It's Ball State versus Central Michigan in that last series.
If Ball State
sweeps, they're in. Like, they're in with no worries. If Ball State wins two games out of three against Central Michigan, they need Akron and Kent State to lose at least one. And if Ball State doesn't win more than one, so Ball State's basically got to win two or three in that series to have a chance to make it to the conference tournament. But you're in a really good position, Mark. You look at where this is sitting, and it's a favorable position in terms of controlling your own destiny. You control the cards to that, and if Ball State sweeps, you finish above 500 in conference. You finish 26-26 in the overall season with the first-year head coach. That is a statement to build the foundation with Coach Pena.
Yeah, I think it's great. Should be a great weekend for Ball State sports. Mick Titchell, voice of the Cardinals, with us. Thanks, my friend. You have a good rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate you, Mark, and thanks for having me as always. Can't wait to see your golf swing coming up here soon. Go kart.
You don't want to see it right now, Mick. I appreciate it. That's Mick Tidrow with us. Yeah, I've had to turn down a lot of golf this year. There's been a lot less golf this season, but a big thanks to Mick. Big thanks to all of you. We're going to recap a bit of Game 6 Pacers-Bucks. We're live at the 1925 Pump House at the Courtyard tomorrow with George Bremer. Talk to you then.